Good morning to you all. This is the 573rd day of the war in Europe. Our newscasters in England, Germany, and Washington are waiting at their mics, ready to report the latest developments here and abroad. First, let's hear from England. Go ahead, London.
This is London. Ed Doy speaking. London celebrated last night the best day the British have had since the beginning of the war. Restaurants and nightclubs were crowded. Piccadilly Circus at midnight had an after-the-theater pre-war traffic jam. The French, Greek, and Turkish eating places of Soho kept open long after their usual 10 o'clock closing time. The news cheered one man so much, he gave $8,000 to a hospital for two beds to be named Churchill and Roosevelt. In spite of the British victories in East Africa, the Yugoslav coup took the main play in the newspapers. Several of the papers had two pictures on the front pages, one of King Peter and the other of a piece of cheese, which isn't as funny as it sounds. The new cheese ration comes into effect May 5th, 1 ounce a week per person, and the editors thought it appropriate to show the people just how much or how little they would get. It is about the size of a package of a dozen razor blades. About Yugoslavia, the general sentiment is that Hitler has been outblitzed. The experiences of the last war gave the Germans a healthy respect for the Serbs. And in view of their intense nationalism and fighting qualities, it is considered strange that Hitler used the same methods to strangle them as he did with other countries. The Times believes Ribbentrop badly overplayed his hand. He was dealing with men who could not bind the stubborn will of the Yugoslav people. And the ostentation with which he, Ribbentrop, thrust himself into the forefront of the picture at Vienna will make it particularly difficult for him to minimize the blow to his prestige. The only way out of the predicament is the use of brute force. Hitler doesn't like to squander manpower unless it is absolutely necessary. His troop movements indicate that he is preparing to march into southern Yugoslavia from Bulgaria. It is reported that in addition to demanding an explanation of the change of government, he has asked King Peter about the meaning of the army's mobilization and movement to defensive positions. The wives and children of German officials in Belgrade have been packed into the German legation, which is strongly guarded. Prince Paul is generally assumed to have been directed to the Greek frontier, although there is no definite news. King George of Britain has sent a telegram of congratulations and good wishes to King Peter in Belgrade. Important developments are expected within 48 hours. Hitler will have to extricate himself from a wholly unexpected situation in the shortest possible time. South African and Indian forces didn't stop long at Karen. They are already pushing on towards Asmara. The eastern advance of the German mechanized columns in Libya may in the meantime be slowed up. The magnitude of the failure of the big Italian offensive in Albania recently is emphasized by the news just revealed that the Italian commander on March 23rd enabled the Italians to bury their dead. This is the first request of its kind in the war. London had its first air raid alarm in 180 hours this morning. German planes made for the city, but were driven off by RAF fighters. A lone raider dived out of the clouds and dropped a stick of bombs on a south coast town. Six houses were wrecked and there were casualties. The air ministry also announced this morning that two Heinkels yesterday attacked the convoy in the Bristol Channel. A convoying destroyer, the Leith, shot down one and crippled the other so badly that it was seen to fly off, losing height rapidly. There were no attacks on this country last night. The RAF, meanwhile, battered the Ruhr and the Rhineland industrial areas, especially Cologne and Düsseldorf. Visibility was not good, but one of the bombs, at least, was seen to hit its target. Queues formed outside His Majesty's stationery office this morning, long before opening time. There was a rush to buy a pamphlet telling for the first time the complete story of the Battle of Britain in the air last August, October. It is a thrilling story of the failure of Field Marshal Goering's massed bomber and fighter escort attempt to shatter Britain into capitulation. The attack was made in several phases, it is revealed, and the German tactics were changed frequently. It was known that a handful of RAF fighter pilots turned back this monster attack, but the pamphlet hints that the number of defenders was even smaller than supposed. The pamphlet promises to be a bestseller at 5 cents. As good, indeed, a seller as the British Blue Book on the origins of the war. I return you now to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
From the Associated Press, the Italian High Command reported today the important walled city of Harar in Ethiopia had been evacuated to avert its bombing and acknowledged British occupation of the Italian fortress of Karen in Eritrea. We've heard the news from England today, next to the Reich, for a report on developments on the other side of the channel. Will you go ahead, Berlin?
Hello, NBC. This is Third Ocknout speaking from Berlin. News of what has been going on in Yugoslavia will have reached America direct. And what we are interested here is what is being said here about the sensational developments that took place yesterday in Belgrade. The German public was informed of the coup d'etat that resulted in the proclamation of King Peter II and the formation of a new government on the radio last evening. And the news is brought today in all the papers that the names of the new cabinet and the announcement that reserve officers in Yugoslavia have been called to the colors. In view of the space given to the Matsuoka visit, the news from Yugoslavia is not given the prominence it would seem to deserve, and there is no newspaper comment as yet either. Today, the radio brings reports of anti-German demonstrations, and there are stories current of attacks on foreign diplomats in Belgrade, the Swedish minister being named as one of them. Communication with the Yugoslav capital is interrupted, and news of what is actually going on is therefore hard to get. It is noted in official circles here that the proclamation of the new government in Yugoslavia is 90% concerned with matters of domestic politics, that it contains no mention of the three-power pact, and that the question of whether Yugoslavia's adherence to the pact will be ratified or repudiated is not touched upon in any way. In this connection, it is interesting to remember that when Yugoslavia signed up on Tuesday, it was stated with much emphasis here that she did so unconditionally, and that the German and Italian notes that guaranteed her sovereignty and territorial integrity, and that disclaimed any intention of sending in troops, had nothing whatsoever to do with the fact of Yugoslavia's signing the treaty. So these notes would seem destined to stand, irrespective of the final action that Yugoslavia may take in regard to the three-power pact. The official German standpoint is one of reserve until more is known about the situation, it being pointed out that it is not the usual thing for a new government to repudiate the treaty engagements of its predecessors. It is noted that there was popular dissatisfaction with the course taken by the old government, which has now resulted in a change. So far as German interests are attacked, Germany will take the usual steps of submitting a protest and demanding satisfaction for outrages committed against her citizens. Contact has been established between the German legation and the new foreign minister. But the big news in the papers is the Matsuoka visit, which yesterday brought about a long interview with Foreign Minister von Ribbentrop in the morning, a meeting with Adolf Hitler in the afternoon, the appearance of the Japanese visitor before the German public on the famous balcony of the Chancellery on the Wilhelmplatz, and an exchange of addresses at a reception in the evening at the Hotel Esplanade. Today, Matsuoka is scheduled to meet Dr. Goebbels and Economics Minister Funk, and there will be a luncheon given by a party not as yet named and a reception at the Japanese embassy in the evening. Tomorrow, Matsuoka is to meet Reich Marshal Goering. No date for his departure has as yet been set. Throngs of curious people are at hand at all times to see the Japanese statesman, and there is much display of hearty cheering whenever he makes an appearance. All the external arrangements for his stay in Berlin seem to be working perfectly. The military communique today reports the sinking of 3 British merchant ships of 15,000 tons altogether on the southwestern shore of Wales by 3 German planes who attacked a convoy. 5 more are said to have been damaged. The British entered western Germany with what are described as a weak formation last night, and damaged houses and killed and injured civilians in places that are not further specified. In their raid, the British are said to have lost 3 planes and 3 more elsewhere, against 1 German machine missing. The Italian communique reports the capture of Karen by the British after a battle that lasted 6 weeks and the abandonment of the important town of Harar in Abyssinia to save it from bombardment. Paul Schaffer of New York has a long article in the Deutsche Allgemeine Zeitung today in which he quotes Henry Luce in Life and Francis Brown. And with all the understanding which he manifestly has of American currents, he comes to the conclusion that America is in for expansion on her own account and that the isolationists are fighting a lost cause. But he refrains from saying that we are getting into the war. This is Theodore Knaut speaking from Berlin and returning you to NBC.
That's the news from across the Atlantic. Now Earl Godwin gives you his report from our newsroom in Washington.
Good morning, folks. Washington's entire attention this morning is focused on the strike situation following the dramatic warning late yesterday afternoon by Chairman Sumner's of the Judiciary Committee of the House that his committee, which has before it a mass of anti-strike legislation, is ready to send enemies of the country to the electric chair, whether found in field or factory. Despite that dramatic utterance, Summers did not advocate immediate anti-strike legislation, declaring that public opinion can do a better job to keep down useless and unnecessary strikes than a mere law. But Summers warned that this country is being led along the same path down which France went to ruin. Strikes in defense industry, he warned, are dangerously depleting our own strength. He said we have our Maginot Line, which is the Navy, and that the Navy may be sunk. And Sumner's made the flat prediction that we are headed for war and said it is childish to believe the only way we can get into a war is to start shooting first. Apparently, Mr. Sumner's believe that this country may be attacked. Severe anti-strike legislation was introduced in the House. Representative Cox of Georgia would amend the draft law to draft workmen and office personnel if necessary. And Representative Howard Smith of Virginia asked to revive his investigating committee's powers so as to delve into the records of current strikes. A sharp difference of opinion flares between CIO Chief Murray on one side and Messrs. Knudsen and Knox, Secretary of the Navy, of course, on the other. Mr. Murray wanted to know by what right Knudsen and Knox cracked down on the Alice Chalmers situation. Knudsen and Knox replied, "It wasn't a crackdown, it was an appeal to patriotism. And anyhow," said they had found out there were so many forged ballots in the original strike vote out there in Milwaukee that the balloting, in their opinion, was a fraud anyhow. Well, the new mediation board, 11 members, will get down to brass tacks this morning to select personnel to start the smoothing out processes on the four big strikes which the Secretary of Labor has certified cannot be settled by the ordinary means of the mediation machinery set up by the government. Meantime, Washington hears that anti-strike sentiment has cropped up in two state legislatures. Oklahoma and Texas have passed bills restricting labor activities in defense industries. However, Senate Democratic Leader Barkley voices a moderate note. Barkley says that while the nation cannot allow the defense labor situation to drift along, he believes no action should be taken until the new mediation board is given a chance to prove its worth, and incidentally, that is orthodox administration sentiment at this town at this moment. While the Senate Appropriations, when the Senate Appropriations Committee meets this morning, it will discuss the largest farm bill in all our history, a bill that carries more than $1.33 billion in cash and $275 million authorized for loans to farmers. This farm bill is backed by that powerful Senate farm bloc, which demands that farmers share with industry and labor in the prosperity from defense spending. And according to the farm bloc, defense has not yet brought profit to the farms. And Earl Godwin says goodbye to you. That's all the news from Washington at this time.
Each day, NBC keeps you informed on events in this rapidly changing world. This program is heard over most of these stations each weekday morning at the same time. Listen to it, and you will always keep abreast of late developments in world affairs. This is the National Broadcasting Company.